840 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. U.S. Special Forces swept into Sudan and airlifted out dozens of American embassy workers. Here's CBS's Bo Erickson.
This evacuation of dozens of U.S. diplomats from Sudan comes after a week of fighting and broken ceasefires between Sudan's army and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces.
The abortion pill most widely used in the country will remain available for now after a late ruling Friday by the Supreme Court. Activists were rallying in Chicago.
Abortion on demand without apology.
The case will be heard next month in a circuit court in New Orleans. It's been 5 years since a man killed 11 people at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. And jury selection will finally begin tomorrow in his trial. Maggie Feinstein with the 1027 Healing Partnership.
The people who were very directly impacted by this, the people who lost their loved ones, the people who witnessed, have thought about a trial and justice process probably every day since the attack happened.
Robert Bowers is facing life in prison without parole or even the death penalty. Gail Christian has died. She was a pioneering Black journalist and news executive. Correspondent Allison Keyes.
Christian rose to prominence in the 1970s when the news business was dominated almost exclusively by white men. Christian told the Chicago Tribune that she always wanted to be the Black reporter, as in covering Black stories, because she felt it was very dangerous for a group of people to live in a society where they are not allowed to represent themselves.
Earth Day was observed across the globe yesterday, and CBS's Linda Kenyon tells us installing solar panels could really help the Earth.
The Environment America Research and Policy Center and Frontier Group says the U.S. is home to more than 450,000 warehouses and distribution centers. Collectively, it says, those buildings provide almost 16.4 billion square feet of rooftop space. Covering that space with solar panels could generate 185.6 terawatt hours of clean electricity annually. That's enough to power nearly 19.4 million households for an entire year.
Things seem a bit wonky lately. Mercury is in retrograde right now, and that means you can blame that for pretty much everything that's not going quite right. What does this even mean? Well, most of the time, planets inside our orbit appear to be going in the same direction as the other planets. But every once in a while, it looks like they're traveling backwards. They really aren't. It's just an optical illusion. But still, people believe the universe is off during this time, causing all sorts of problems. This is CBS News.
Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, your personal injury attorneys with over 35 years of experience. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Collada of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you'll seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Walks, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Walks, GTWLawyers.com.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Morning Cannolis, and it is also Saturday, April 22nd. 2023. Thank you so much for joining me on this wonderful Saturday morning here in the state of Wisconsin. This is, as always, our weekly review, our analysis, our discussion of those most important stories and events in government, in law, and the aspiration for justice in America. We are coming to you this morning from the studios of WAUK in beautiful downtown Waukesha, but we're broadcast throughout stations throughout the state of Wisconsin through Civic Media. And again, delighted to have all of you from throughout the state joining me this morning for 2 hours of discussion of justice in America, law in America, government in America, lots and lots of things to get through this morning. As always, we're taking your call-in questions, your comments, your perspectives this morning. That number is 844-967-2789. Once again, 844-967-2789. My wonderful, highly professional producer, Anya, is always here also to take your calls and to get your comments on the air with me this morning, both in this first hour of Morning Cannolis and then also in the second hour. As always, we've got an ambitious but achievable agenda, a syllabus that hopefully will be informative and inspiring. We also always ask three questions. What happened? What are the events of the week? What are the significant things we need to know about? Second, why is that important? Why should we care? Why is it relevant? Why is it material to our lives? And what should we do, if anything we can do? What actions should we take? What responses are out there? And this morning, pursuant to those three questions that we always ask, we do have that very ambitious, hopefully educational, hopefully inspiring, thought-provoking syllabus for you this morning. After a few minutes talking, as we often do, about what happened today in history, both American history and worldwide history, I'm going to talk about some major, highly important breaking stories in the life and livelihood of our nation. Of course, I'm going to talk again this morning about abortion, privacy rights, and in particular, something major that the United States Supreme Court did just yesterday, late yesterday afternoon, having to do with this drug mifepristone and the consequences of that. We'll chat about how we got there. We'll also talk about what's going to happen in the wake of this very important decision by the Supreme Court, in many ways, not to decide and to send it back to the lower court. We're going to talk also about another major story having to do with the rule of law and justice in America, and that is the settlement early this week in the Dominion voting case against Fox News. We'll talk about the things that, again, led up to that, both in terms of the rulings by the presiding judge, the significance of that settlement, and where things go from here, the cases that are still out there to be adjudicated in the courts of our land. We're going to talk again about Airman Teixeira, that is the young man who compromised, presumably, according to the allegations coming out of the Department of Justice, our national security by posting online information about our relationship with Russia and in specific our connection with and our support of Ukraine and its war against Russia. Some interesting news breaking just in that front as well. We'll talk about the process of this past week, a little bit of criminal constitutional procedure, and also, again, talk about what's going to happen down the road. We necessarily need to talk once again about the Supreme Court, not only in connection with its decision yesterday about abortion and about what's going to happen in the future, but also about Clarence Thomas, some additional information about things he disclosed and most importantly did not disclose in the past about his expenditures, the things that he was receiving as gifts, his connections with a Texas billionaire, and things that would now be required and also compelling the advocacy is going to be a compelled establishment of a code of ethics for the members of the Supreme Court. We'll talk about that, the reasons for that, the impetus for getting that done, and then reaching into the states of our nation, talking about Tennessee and the expulsion of those two legislators, their return to the legislature there, and then also because all of that related to firearms in America, we're going to begin in our second hour discussion of that all-important issue, hearkening back to two recent decisions of our Supreme Court that have dramatically impacted our thinking, our understanding, the law of guns, firearms in our nation, and then also talking about the things that can and should be done in Wisconsin and throughout the United States to address what is plainly a crisis. Not only a healthcare crisis, a security crisis, a safety crisis in our nation, talking about the events of just this past week and things that can and should be done, answering that third question that we always ask here on Morning Cannolis. Again, thanking you for joining me this morning, both in our first hour and then our second hour. We're going to be here all morning taking your comments, your questions once again at 844-967-2789. Anya and I here in the studios to take those questions, those perspectives, and those inquiries about things that we're talking about in our ambitious but achievable syllabus this morning. Let's talk first about things that happened on this date, April 22nd, in the history of our world, the history of our nation. Many of this morning, related to the rule of law and justice-related issues. Let's talk first about a significant thing that happened beginning noon, 1889, April 22nd, by federal decree, specifically a thing called the Indian Appropriations Bill that authorized the taking the transfer of lands by those laws. White settlers, for the first time, were allowed into Indian country, into what we now know as Oklahoma, at that time the Oklahoma Territory. This happening, obviously, in the context of the Trail of Tears, our terrible mistreatment of major tribes moved across the southern portion of our nation, ultimately landing in Oklahoma. Today, 1889 at noon, white settlers permitted to go into that Indian country, leading to sparking a land rush involving quite literally tens of thousands of people coming into Oklahoma for that purpose. Significant in many, many ways beyond the time we have this morning to discuss that. We know as well that the Supreme Court not too long ago, a couple of years ago, in an opinion called McGirt, was authored by Neil Gorsuch of the Supreme Court, found that much, if not all, of the what is now known as Oklahoma, at that time the Oklahoma Territory, was in fact and is still in fact an Indian territory, Indian land, by virtue of territorial treaties and other decrees entered into by the United States government with those Native American tribes, sovereign nations in our nation back in the late 19th century. And so today, again, we think about that event, 1889, on this day in history. Another issue related to, once again, international law. It was on today, 1915, in the midst of World War I, that German forces introduced horrifically the systematized use of chemical warfare when the Germans released for the first time some chlorine gas. It was along a four-mile front at the Second Battle of Ypres in Belgium. And it initiated this notion that it was somehow permissible in the midst of war, which is admittedly crisis, tragedy from beginning to end, to impose that kind of warfare upon an enemy combatant. Systemized use of chemical warfare. We know that the rule of law eventually took place and took over, even in the midst of something that is decidedly not justice-related, that is war. Nonetheless, chemical warfare since prohibited, even in the midst of war, not always observed, and we know that plainly there are some leaders of nations who have sometimes used chemical warfare, sometimes on their own people. But again, a rule of law issue back in 1915, during the course of World War I, the first time that chemical weapons were used in the midst of military efforts. That in 1915. 1952, the U.S. broadcast for the first time a live atomic bomb test, Yucca Flat in Nevada. That would happen on television in 1952. Other things, a big event in 1970 on this day was the first Earth Day, which we're going to be observing, of course, this week, all throughout our nation. We should be observing Earth Day, and we'll do that, just that. It was first observed on April 22nd, 1970, when about 20 million people around the country, students, young people, middle-aged people, older people, gathered together in communities, schools, colleges, places of common gathering to recognize that this is our Earth and the only Earth that we have. It initiated by virtue of the not only directives, but also the things that were encouraged to be done at that time, a whole focus on ways in which we can do things to preserve our country, and most importantly, the world in which we live, recognizing that borders of nations do not prohibit, do not keep contaminants, environmental challenges from passing over them. Earth Day 1970 on this day, April 22nd. Also on this day, another significant issue in the rule of law happening, Elian Gonzalez. Remember that name, Elian Gonzalez? A six-year-old who survived a shipwreck. He and his mother were coming here from Cuba. And his mother was drowned, tragically, along with others, as he was making his way to Florida. He comes here, and he is ultimately in the custody, the control, if you will, of some relatives in Florida. A great, great international dispute that was negotiated by one of my bosses. Had the great honor and privilege to work for Janet Reno, the longest-serving contemporary attorney general in our history. Janet Reno obliged to determine what should happen with Elian Gonzalez by virtue of the fact that matters related to international law and specifically immigration, these kinds of things, within the purview, within the focus of the U.S. Department of Justice. Ultimately, Janet Reno making the decision to return Elian Gonzalez to his father, who wanted him back in Cuba. And she makes that determination. And as a result of that, it was on this day, April 22nd of 2000, 23 years ago, that a SWAT team came into the home where Elian Gonzalez was being cared for by his family and took him, returned him ultimately to his father in Cuba. We know and we have seen that Elian Gonzalez has reappeared in the national and international stage. He is now a representative in the government of Cuba and making statements about his role. Obviously, no longer a six-year-old, a young adult, pursuing presumably his future and the future of his country there in Cuba. 2000, Elian Gonzalez was on this day returned to his father. Also on this day, 2016, the Paris Agreement on Climate Change, a bookend in many ways to what we are observing tomorrow and the days ahead, Earth Day, this landmark treaty that sought to control and reduce greenhouse gas concentrations in our atmosphere. It took effect in November, but it was signed today, April 22nd of 2016. All those things, all those important things happening on this day in history, April 22nd. Many of them, it is significant how many of them do in fact partake of the rule of law. Speaking of the rule of law and justice, as we come back from this break, going to launch into those major stories we talked about having to do with justice, government, and the rule of law in America. Stay with us for that and much more.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a 3-hour block
of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoyed by the sly, so enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media Station or on the app.
Now in session. Today's subjects, biology.
Name an animal with a long neck.
Dinosaur, long necky.
Let me ask you something. When last time you seen one?
Anatomy.
Name a part of Steve Harvey that a woman might want to kiss.
Your six-pack.
The six-pack? Does she know who Steve Harvey is? You got to dig for it, but it's in there.
Get school with Family Feud.
Weeknights at 6 and 6:30 on CW18.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Cloudy skies expected this afternoon, with a chance for snow becoming mixed precipitation. Highs around 42, westerly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Partly cloudy tonight, mixed precipitation possible at times, lows around 30. A blend of clouds and sun again tomorrow, chance for isolated showers, daytime highs approaching 50. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
We are back here on Morning Cannolis, talking with you this morning, as we do every Saturday morning, about justice, the rule of law in America, and government as well. Let's launch into those major stories, big stories of this past week. Let's begin with a word we have all come to pronounce well, mifepristone. That is the drug that has been much on our minds, much on our tongues, much in the writing of the Supreme Court, as it turns out, just last night. What is the predicate for this? We have chatted about this before. We've talked about this before, and I suspect many of you, if not all of you, already know what the predicates for this are. We have a judge in the Northern District of Texas, a federal judge. His name is Kaczmarek. A couple of weeks ago, he makes a determination that mifepristone, which is commonly used, authorized for a quarter of a century by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, to be used safely and effectively in abortions and in other reproductive services, also highly important for treatment of miscarriage situations. That drug, safe and secure, according to all the testing, all the reporting, the recording of those tests by the FDA. Judge Kaczmarek takes a look at this upon the petition, upon a civil lawsuit filed there in his court, and says that the authorization given by the FDA some 23 years ago, inadequate, improper, and therefore bans the use of mifepristone nationwide, not just in northern Texas, nationwide, finds that that was inappropriately done by the FDA, and so sends the issue of abortion back into not only our national consciousness, but also ultimately ending in the Supreme Court. We'll get to that in just a moment or so. He does stay his opinion for about 7 days because he recognizes that this is controversial, that he is, for the first time in our nation's history, a federal judge who has taken it upon himself to determine what the FDA is properly commissioned and authorized to determine here. That is the medical efficacy and effectiveness of drugs. He decides that the FDA acted improperly, stays that order for about 7 days, and sure enough, the United States Department of Justice, your United States Department of Justice, pursues this where to an appeal to the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. the immediate court above the district court in the Northern District of Texas, one of the most conservative courts, as we know from our previous discussions in the United States of America. And the Court of Appeals does this. They basically say that Mifepristone could remain available, but that access to it would remain restricted according to what Judge Kaczmarek had said. Specifically, important issues related to access by virtue of the mails, which is one of the principal ways in which Mifepristone is distributed across state lines. That aspect of the FDA ruling that permitted that to happen, that was likewise struck down, if you will, by the Fifth Circuit. Also that non-physicians could no longer prescribe this, could no longer give authorization for the use and distribution of the pill. Those things also authorized by the FDA by virtue of its review and its imprimatur upon those processes. So that's where it stands coming out of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. The United States Department of Justice not satisfied with that. According to our attorney general, according to the civil folks at Maine Justice, they appeal. They pursue an emergency appeal to the United States Supreme Court, asking the Supreme Court to overturn what the Fifth Circuit did, to overturn what the lower court, Judge Kaczmarek, did, and return things to the way they have been in this nation for a quarter century. And during the course of this past week, the Supreme Court did a number of different things. The first thing the Supreme Court does is it orders that the parties early this week on Monday and Tuesday submit some briefs, putting this plainly on a fast track for decision. And of course, they do that. The government files its brief, the opposition in favor of what the Fifth Circuit and what the lower court has done. They also file briefs. Those are reviewed by the Supreme Court, anticipating a decision on Wednesday. But on Wednesday of this week, we got another important opinion from the Supreme Court saying that we're going to extend the decision process here. We're going to continue what the Supreme Court had previously said, which is we're staying everything. We're not going to permit anything to go into effect until we've got the opportunity to review all the things in front of us. And they moved the deadline date, if you will, until midnight last night, midnight on Friday, and said we'll issue something by the close of business, or certainly by midnight last night, when this otherwise established deadline would expire. And sure enough, true to their word, that's exactly what the Supreme Court did. Late yesterday, the Supreme Court said that everything will in fact go back, at least for now, temporarily, to the way it was before these decisions. Basically, that Mifepristone remains available, that the access provisions provided by the FDA with respect to mail and also by non-physician prescription, those could remain in place as well. All that gets returned to the way it was before Judge Kaczmarek and his order started all this, but not making a substantive ruling on the merits of the case. Instead, what the Supreme Court says is we're sending this back. We're going to send this back to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and we'll have them basically play around with this, review this in greater detail, determine what should and should not happen there. And sure enough, by an order of 7-2, seven members of the Supreme Court, two of them dissenting, 7-2. The Supreme Court sends this entire matter, even while it continues to be stayed, anything below, none of that, those decisions that are overturning the precedent, the tradition of 25 years, none of that in place, sends it back to the Fifth Circuit. And on May 17th, not too long from now, the Fifth Circuit is going to have oral argument on the merits of all of this. A three-judge panel will take this up again, presumably briefs that have already been filed, presumably more briefs going to be filed. And on May 17th, attorneys for both sides arguing this case again, not before the Supreme Court, but before the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, determining whether or not, again, once again, Mifepristone remains accessible, and if so, under what conditions. Does the FDA have the authority to do this, and under what conditions will that go forward? Significantly, this is a part of what is sometimes called the shadow docket by the Supreme Court, entering an order not premised upon a huge exposition of its facts and of the reasons for doing it. And as we come back right after the break, we're going to talk with you more about the specifics of the order from the Supreme Court yesterday, sending this back to the Fifth Circuit, an order that does get some attention because of the things that Justice Alito said in dissent, along with Justice Thomas in this case. Stay with us for that discussion here on Morning Cannolis.
I'm gonna take it right into the
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for News Talk Radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Fighting has intensified in Sudan, and U.S. Special Forces have swept in to get American embassy workers out. CBS's Bo Erickson.
U.S. officials for days warned of extreme danger on the streets of Khartoum, Sudan's capital, and told both American personnel and American citizens in the country to shelter in place.
While the Supreme Court ruled that access to a common abortion pill will still be allowed for now, protesters continued rallying. WBBM's Brandon Eisen is in Chicago.
A small group that has regularly been protesting legal challenges to abortion access, bringing their bullhorn to Federal Plaza, along with a big banner that reads Red State, Blue State, the war on women is nationwide.
Jury selection gets underway tomorrow in the trial of a man who killed 11 people at a synagogue in Pittsburgh.
I'm not the same person that I was the day before on October 26th. I don't think you can be.
CBS News Brief. I'm Stacy Lynn.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Walks, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Walks, GTWLawyers.com.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Home ownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weichert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
Everyone deserves freedom over their own body. Everyone deserves the right to choose. Everyone deserves access to quality, affordable health care without judgment. And everyone deserves a health care provider who stands firm on these beliefs. This is the Planned Parenthood experience at any one of our 22 health centers across Wisconsin that offer reproductive health care services for everyone. Book your appointment today at ppwi.org. That's ppwi.org, and get the care you deserve, because we will provide that care no matter what.
Todos merecen la libertad sobre su propio cuerpo. Todo el mundo merece el derecho a elegir. Todos merecen acceso a una atención médica económica y de calidad sin juicios. Y todos merecen un proveedor de atención médica que se mantenga firme en estas creencias. Esta es la experiencia de Planned Parenthood en cualquiera de nuestros 22 centros de salud en Wisconsin, que ofrecen servicios de salud reproductiva para todos. Haz una cita hoy en ppwi.org y obtenga la atención que se merece, porque nosotros le brindaremos esa atención, pase lo que pase.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Jim Santel for just a few more minutes. As you point out, this is a civil trial, not a criminal trial. You think that the Trump org will end up with the death penalty under New York law.
Letitia James, she's doing a civil case, right? This is a criminal matter.
Oh, it is. So I misunderstood.
It is, yes.
Normally I leave the being wrong to Dom.
Right?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
We are back. Thank you for joining me this morning in our discussion right now at this time of this major decision issued by the United States Supreme Court just within the past 24 hours, basically saying that mifepristone remains available. This abortion pill, this pill used, this pharmaceutical used, also in connection with miscarriage treatment, remains available pursuant to the FDA approval granted about a quarter century ago. Again, safely and securely, medical treatment in our nation. Along the way, the Supreme Court says that we're sending this back to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Oral argument in a few weeks, May 17th. They can take up the merits of this. It's not over. It's not done. Likely to percolate up once again to the United States Supreme Court. But we know from the order, the summary order issued by the Supreme Court, that this was not a unanimous decision, that there were seven justices in favor of sending this back to the Fifth Circuit for its further adjudication of the merits. Two of the justices dissented. And one of them in particular wrote a bit of an opinion complaining about the fact that the Supreme Court is not, in fact, wrestling with this issue on the merits. His name is Justice Samuel Alito. He happens to also be the justice who, as you well know, wrote this landmark decision that was released in June of last year in Dobbs versus Reproductive Health Services, overturning nearly 50 years of privacy rights in connection with reproductive rights and abortion in America. Justice Alito yesterday writing that he is not happy with his colleagues on the Supreme Court sending this back. And in particular, he does two things in his dissent in his decision, his opinion that this case should not have been sent back. He first suggests along the way that the Biden administration would not have followed a decision of the Supreme Court on its merits, even so. A fascinating thing for a Supreme Court justice to say, plainly, completely hypothetical, completely inappropriate, I would offer, just because it's just this random comment about the Biden administration, suggesting the Biden administration would not follow the rule of law, even if the Supreme Court were to issue an order. So that's one portion of his dissent in this. The other one is taking some shots, if you will, at his colleagues. And for part of his opinion, he talks about this thing called the shadow docket. Again, not a great word. I'm not a big fan of it. It's basically where the Supreme Court members rule on procedural matters like this, typically not substantive. Cases that are considered on this docket typically do not get the same level of review, the in-depth oral argument, all the briefing of other cases, typically because of the need to act quickly. And the decisions are usually accompanied by little, if no explanation about why they're doing what they're doing. You don't get a lot of clarity, and thus the word shadow. But it's not done in the shadows. It's just a procedural device to get things moving. So that's what the order was all about yesterday. Along the way, Justice Alito takes this opportunity to focus on this shadow docket concept. He writes that the court had previously been criticized for shadow docket decision-making and specifically calls out three female justices, his colleagues on the Supreme Court, Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Amy Coney Barrett. Again, across the political aisles, the partisan aisles, if you will, liberal and conservative. And he cites rulings at the time about their what he calls their hypocrisy, in which they previously objected to using the shadow docket, but yesterday using it to accomplish this. He defended the court against complaints about the use of this docket in the past and said this. He said, I do not agree with these criticisms at the time, but if they were warranted in the cases in which they were made, they are emphatically true here. Again, none of this significant in terms of changing the outcome, but significant that Judge Alito, along with Judge Thomas, are dissenting in this decision to send the matter back to the Fifth Circuit, and along the way, not just implicitly, but explicitly, permitting the FDA approval of mifepristone to go forward. And so today, on this morning of April 22nd, 2023, we're back to where we were before Justice Judge Kaczmarek in Northern Texas entered his orders a couple of weeks ago. But more to come, and certain in wake of the oral argument of May 17th, probably at just about the time that the Supreme Court is going to be issuing decisions in many, many other cases, probably in May, in June, we're going to hear again from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals on the merits, the substantive merits of this case that had sort of a rocket ride from the Northern District to the Fifth Circuit, to the Supreme Court, now going back to the Fifth Circuit for further adjudication. Stay tuned as we continue to analyze and talk about all of this. Along the way, we know well that the Supreme Court in recent times, as a part of its legal movement generally, has been focusing on dismantling what's called the administrative state. In recent years, as we've talked in this broadcast, increasingly skeptical the majority has been, not the minority, but the majority been of the power of administrative agencies. And you may recall well that even its last term, the Supreme Court restricted the Environmental Protection Agency in tackling climate change issues, another issue coming up this term as well under the Clean Water Act. So we'll be visiting that again. Also prohibiting the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, its power to limit the spread of the coronavirus, and the president's executive power to do things to keep us safe and secure in the workplace, to keep us healthy in that setting. So a huge focus on the administrative state. Why is that relevant here? Well, plainly, we've got another agency here, the FDA, also making decisions, important decisions about our lives, our livelihood, about the medicines to which we can and should have access. All of that, a part of the Supreme Court's review of these cases. Highly likely, the Supreme Court, even though it felt at the time of Dobbs last year that this is not a matter that should be in the courts, but should be in the legislatures for the people to decide through their legislative representatives, it's coming back. And the Supreme Court certainly is going to be hearing this matter likely once again, once the Fifth Circuit decides the case. Whoever wins, whoever loses, likely to appeal this yet again to the Supreme Court. The case, the contest, the challenge goes on in America. Speaking of challenges, let's turn to one of the other major news stories of this past week. Challenges in court, this time in the Delaware Superior Court. This is a state court, not a federal court, but a Delaware Superior Court. And in particular, a case presided over by a gentleman named Eric Davis, Judge Eric Davis. What is the case? You know it well. It's Dominion voting machines versus Fox News. Dominion voting machines versus Fox News. What is the basis for this lawsuit? A couple of years ago, Dominion voting machines files this civil lawsuit again, not a criminal lawsuit, a civil lawsuit seeking defamation damages from Fox News. And how does that come about? They allege, Dominion voting machines, that by virtue of things said by the on-air so-called talent, by the anchors, by the people on Fox News who are daily and every evening coming into your homes, coming into your workplaces, espousing a couple of things. One is that the 2020 election was stolen. The big lie is, in fact, not a big lie, that indeed Joe Biden did not win the election. Espousing all of that plainly untrue fact about the 2020 election, that the election was stolen by virtue of fraud, other things happening during the course of polling. All of that, of course, not true, proven by every single court that looked at this in the wake of the 2020 election, knowing to be a lie coming out of the mouths and the earpieces of the anchors of Fox News. Dominion voting machines brought into this because Fox News is also saying that the Dominion voting machines are one of the mechanisms through which this fraud was accomplished. Dominion voting machines has this mechanism, according to Fox News, by virtue of which a vote for Donald Trump was changed to a vote for Joe Biden. And this happened with sufficient frequency that the vote was therefore skewed and we've got the wrong president in the White House. Completely untrue, completely false. And Dominion voting machines comes back and says, you know, we're not going to take that. They file a lawsuit in the Delaware court, and they allege that Fox News, by virtue of these very public things stated about the Dominion voting machines and their entity, their provision of these highly reliable and integrity-filled machines, that those statements that suggest that they're not, in fact, either one of those things are defamatory, that Fox News has defamed Dominion voting machines. And they seek $1.6 billion in damages. Why? Because according to Dominion, the statements by Fox News caused them to lose business, caused them to have compromises in their reputation. Makes some sense, right? What happens is during the course of the next 2 years, discovery, pretrial discovery, before this goes to trial, lots of information exchanged, people deposed, including the on-air talent at Fox News, Rupert Murdoch deposed, who is the owner and operator of Fox News as well. All kinds of information exchanged between the parties in anticipation of what? The start of the trial, which was in fact begun just barely this past week in the courtroom presided over by Judge Eric Davis. And prior to the start of that proceeding this past week, Judge Davis does three things that change dramatically what happened this past week. He says, first of all, I'm finding as a matter of law, as a matter of fact, that all these things that Fox News said on the air during the course of the number of years in which they've been broadcasting, all these things about the big lie, all these things about the 2020 election being stolen, and that Dominion voting machines were in part the reason for the defrauding of that vote, all that's not true. And Judge Eric Davis says, I'm going to tell the jury as a matter of law and as a matter of fact, they don't need to wrestle with that issue. It is a matter of fact that I am instructing them that the statements made by Fox News were false. None of that was true, and they're going to hear that from me. I'm making that finding as a matter of my judicial oversight of this case. What he does say is, I'm going to let the jury decide a second issue. And the second issue that I'm going to let them decide is whether or not those statements were articulated, were conveyed by that on-air talent with what's called malicious intent. Malicious intent. Did they intend to do it? Did they knowingly say things on the air that were false? The statements were false. Did they do that with the intent of malice, with the intent to misrepresent, knowing what they were doing? And that's the question that Judge Davis says, I will leave for the jury to decide. Well, with respect to that, we also know that during the course of discovery, huge numbers of statements made internal to Fox News, between the anchors, among them staff leaders, news directors, saying that they recognize behind the scenes that all those things they're saying on air are not true. Admissions behind the scenes in emails, in texts, that they know that the position being taken by the now former president, that the election was stolen, completely false. And even make some scurrilous comments about the people who articulate that view, acknowledging along the way that what they're saying on the air is completely contrary to what they know to be true. That is very compelling evidence of exactly that second issue that Judge Davis was going to send to the jury, which is, well, this was this done with malicious intent, with the intent, basically, to defraud the American populace tuning into Fox News. And so that portion of the discovery, highly relevant to the case. Judge Davis does a couple of other things that are also important to understanding the case. Number one, he says that I'm going to prevent Fox News from defending this case by saying this. Fox News purporting to argue before the jury that what they were doing was simply reporting on what other people were saying, that they themselves were not saying these things. These were not their own creations, but things that other people were saying, including Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell and other people out there articulating this big lie. They were simply reporting on that. And Judge Davis also said, you know what? I'm not going to permit you to argue that before the jury. If you try it, I'm going to shut you down. Do not argue that sort of derivative use argument. You still repeated those statements. You're responsible for the statements. And so he shuts down that defense as well. And finally, a third thing happens. All this before the trial begins. The judge also reviews a major, more than foot fault, but a huge, huge problem among the attorneys for Fox News. Specifically, during the course of the last days, right before the trial, Fox News produces some additional discovery related to these things that are also being said behind the scenes, and also reveals for the first time after 2 years of discovery, that Rupert Murdoch had a much greater role to play with respect to the news and the administration of the on-air presentations. Those revelations made right before the trial begins, and the judge also expresses great concern about that, says, I'm going to sanction you for that late discovery disclosure. I may appoint someone to investigate this, and because of that, I am going to impose sanctions against you. In the wake of all that, the big news of this past week, which we will talk about right after this break, the result of all those rulings, all those 2 years of discovery exchanges, culminating in a major event on Tuesday of this past week. Stay with us as we discuss this major piece of litigation settled this past week in the Delaware State Court.
Attention all DIYers. When you're looking for the best products and supplies to take your landscaping to the next level, look no further than Choice Landscaping. For 30 years, Choice Landscaping and Garden Center continues to deliver professional and personal service within a 10-mile radius of Cudahy, but welcomes customers from all over. Whether it's spring, summer, fall, or winter, his Garden Center is open year-round to cover all your needs. So don't wait. For more info, visit ChoiceLandscaping.com. Choice Landscaping. Cover all your needs.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Plenty of people start something great in their 40s and 50s. Getting your retirement savings on track is no different. Go to aceyourretirement.org and in 3 minutes you'll get personalized tips to help boost your retirement savings. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Chance for snow becoming mixed precipitation this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies. High of 42, winds out of the west, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Partly cloudy skies tonight. Mixed precipitation possible at times. Lows dip down to about 30. A blend of clouds and sun tomorrow. Chance for isolated rain showers. Highs level off around 50. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
We are back for our final segment of just this first hour, our two-hour program this morning, and we're talking about Fox News and about this major lawsuit brought by Dominion Voting Machines against Fox News for defamation, a case that resulted in a not entirely surprising, but certainly sudden result this past week. Right before the break, talking with you about these major decisions made by the presiding judge to shut down Fox News in connection with many of its arguments about the manner in which its on-air talent behaved in perpetrating this fraud, these lies about the 2020 election, indicating as well that their own lawyers were in some trouble with the court. Never a good thing right before trial to be in trouble with the court. The judge finding that they had also engaged in discovery violations, sanctioning them and telling them they're in trouble even as we're going to trial. So what happens? All of this going ahead while these behind-the-scenes rulings are being made. And over the weekend, the judge, Eric Davis, says, you know what, I'm going to take a one-day hiatus. And so on Monday, contrary to the previous schedule, nothing happens in court, leading an awful lot of people to think, well, gee, maybe something is in fact going on here in the wake of these significant decisions by Judge Eric Davis, pretty much shutting down, recognizing that this case is going to trial. Maybe it is finally dawning on Fox News that this is real and that indeed they're going to trial. And one of the things that probably animated a lot of what happened on Monday and then into Tuesday was just this. Undeniably, during the course of the trial, many of those people, that on-air talent, people like Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, maybe even, likely even, Rupert Murdoch himself, the owner-operator, taking the stand, and whether on direct or cross-examination, almost certainly being confronted not only with their hypocrisy, the things they say on air being completely contrary to what they say behind the scenes, acknowledging privately amongst themselves to each other and to their news staff supervisors that the things they're saying on air are false, are not true about the 2020 election, they would certainly be confronted on the stand not only with those misstatements on air, but probably required to say in the end, to acknowledge under oath, that what they have done, what they have said over the course of these many years on air has been a lie. The things that they have said are not true, and the representations said to their viewers about the 2020 election being stolen, including the fact that Dominion voting machines were somehow responsible for that, all of that was made up. None of that true, and they knew it. And they knew it. And probably the prospect of Fox News having its on-air talent being in a public domain, testifying under oath to that hypocrisy, was too much. And so what happens sometime on Monday, almost certainly, is Fox News, after not having engaged in much settlement, as far as we know, with Dominion voting machines, not much discussion there, approaches Dominion voting machines and says, what can we do to settle this case? And indeed, we don't know. We don't know exactly how this played out, but we do know what happened on Tuesday morning in the wake of these bad rulings for Fox News by the judge, and also this prospect that their own talent, their own very much visible personalities will be on the stand having to admit that what they've said to the American people as journalists, knowingly lying to America, that coming up. The result Tuesday morning is that the jury, believe it or not, is impaneled. A jury is set to go. They're ready to hear all this testimony. Indeed, the parties are ready to present their opening statements, an opening statement from Dominion going forward. It's the plaintiff. It's got the burden of proof. An opening statement from Fox News also in the wings, waiting to happen. And right before that happens, there's another pause, and everyone is wondering what's going on here. And ultimately, the judge comes out and says, members of the jury, we thank you very much for the service you provided, but in fact, we don't need your service because the parties have settled this case. We've taken care of this additional issue with respect to the findings I would otherwise ask you to make. And indeed, the parties have settled. They disposed of this case. They've resolved it, absent the need for going ahead. And we know because of the wake of that, the attorneys for Dominion voting machines came out and said that Fox News had agreed to pay nearly $800 million, $787.5 million in money damages to Dominion voting machines to settle the case. A huge, whopping amount of money, nearly $800 million, about half of what they had requested initially, somehow cut that number down to that. And plainly, there's a basis for that. We don't know quite yet where exactly that specific number comes from, but presumably based upon something related to Dominion voting machines, the defamation of it, and the damages it suffered as a result of these statements by Fox News and its on-air anchors. That announced, again, right after the case is resolved in the Delaware Circuit Court. A couple of things in the wake of all of that. Of course, not completely a surprise after the hiatus of Monday, but certainly a surprise after 2 years of very vigorous litigation. Not a surprise given what likely would have happened in the course of the trial, probably a several-week trial. And in fact, we're not done. We know that there is other lawsuits out there. We know there are other folks out there who are waiting in the wings also. Same kind of allegations, defamation charges. We know that Smartmatic, which is this software company, also alleging defamation by Fox News, software providing some of Smartmatic providing the software, the allegation that Fox News out there is saying that Smartmatic also responsible because of the nature of its software for the undermining of the 2020 election. Same kind of allegations made by Fox News. Smartmatic turns around and they also have sued Fox News to the tune of $2.7 billion. That case going to trial probably in a couple years, no time soon. That is out there as well. Presumably other matters up for resolution, even in the wake of this Fox News case. Now, why is all this important? Why is it significant to spend this much time on it? Well, first of all, it goes to the integrity of one of what is admittedly one of our major, arguably, news sources in America. And this is the kind of thing that every American, regardless of where you are in the political spectrum, what your partisan views, your political views may be, should understand clearly that Fox News, and we knew this before because of the discovery releases, Fox News has paid nearly $800 million to settle a lawsuit in which it allegedly defamed the Dominion voting machines. That is, for all intents and purposes, acknowledgement of responsibility for the things that they said on air. And if nothing more, the American population, again, Republicans, Democrats, people in the middle of the road, should understand the importance of Fox News' position now. A clear revelation in the wake of the discovery, in the wake of the settlement of this case, that Fox News acted contrary to what we anticipate journalists will do, which is convey the news accurately and forthrightly. That's a part of the message coming out of this very important case, a First Amendment case to be sure, but one that should resonate today and beyond for a long period of time in the history of our nation, understanding what responsibility news organizations have and the things that happen when, as here, they do not live up to that great responsibility they have under the First Amendment of our Constitution. Come back for our second hour. We're going to talk more about major issues, including the Supreme Court and other matters before our national attention. Stay with us for that and join us for that discussion as well.
Paid for by U.S. Telecom. Closing the nation's digital divide is more important than ever. Broadband internet opens doors to education, jobs, and healthcare. America's broadband providers are making historic levels of investment, including $86 billion in 2021 alone, to bridge the divide. But millions of Americans, many in rural areas, still lack access to high-speed internet. New federal infrastructure investment will provide more than $42 billion to expand the nation's broadband connectivity. U.S. Telecom President and CEO Jonathan Spalter.
Broadband providers exist to connect communities to opportunity. We did this first through telephone lines and now high-speed internet. Working alongside our company's own investments, these once-in-a-generation federal funds can help achieve our shared goal of high-speed internet for all. State and local officials can lead by ensuring these funds are used wisely.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.